Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrak. Talking about the war between Israel and Hamas is incredibly hard for individuals, groups, even news organizations like our own. After the events of October 7th, my colleague Mitch Wertlieb set out to speak with Vermonters who have personal ties to that region of the world, people who would be willing to share their perspectives on the conflict. Maybe we could all learn something from hearing people with very different backgrounds share their stories with one another, with respect and openness. Today on the show, we are going to share the audio documentary that Mitch produced. Later, he'll join us alongside another guest, Peter Henny. He's a University of Vermont professor of global religious politics and the Middle East. You'll be able to call in and share your reactions to the documentary or ask questions about the current state of the conflict. You can also send us an email anytime during today's show to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. But first, let's listen.
This is Vermont Public. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, and the voices you're about to hear belong to two women with a thing or two to teach when it comes to speaking about difficult subjects. First, let's meet Raneen Salha. She grew up in Milton and likes to bake in her spare time, chocolate chip cookies if she doesn't want to spend all day in the kitchen.
Or I can go to the extreme and do like a Middle Eastern dessert like halawat jibin, which takes hours.
Otherwise, you might find the 19-year-old relaxing with a book or working at a cosmetics store in Williston.
I like beauty and I like skincare and I like taking care of myself, since that is a big part of having that work-life-school balance.
Raneen is entering her junior year at the University of Vermont, and I'd be thinking a lot about balance as well if I were studying neuroscience and psychology on a pre-med track like she is. Sarah White is a bit of a bookworm as well. The 23-year-old recently started revisiting all of the Percy Jackson fantasy novels.
I mean, it's like middle grade, but it's like the nostalgia is still there.
Sarah graduated from UVM in December with a double major in studio art and Spanish.
I really love like working with colors and trying to match colors or trying to get things to look like other things.
And she spends time back home in Boston chasing around her family dog. That would be a 10-year-old Wheaton Terrier that acts like a puppy and has a penchant for thievery.
He is nutty. I've been calling him a shoe bandit recently.
The dog's name is Brady, but even though he's a Beantown-based pup, it has nothing to do with the guy who won all those Super Bowl rings. In fact, Sarah's family often uses the dog's nickname.
We use a lot of Yiddish words, and so we call him Shuggy.
That's short for Meshuggah, which means crazy. And now that you know a lot of Yiddish is spoken in Sarah's house, you may have guessed she's Jewish. Raneen is Palestinian. And both of them have personal connections to people caught up in the war between Israel and Hamas that's been raging since October 7th. That's when Hamas led a deadly attack against people attending a music festival in southern Israel, followed by an Israeli military response that has been swift, devastating, and not limited to members of Hamas. Tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed in Gaza in what has become one of the 21st century's most destructive conflicts. There are fears the war could broaden further, and it may already have by the time you're hearing this. But even though the events of October 7th that sparked the war are what led us to reach out initially to Sarah and Raneen, this war is only the latest in a deadly conflict with roots reaching back centuries. And those years contain complex threads interweaving past and present, along with perspectives and perceptions that can too often be warped by personal or political bias. This conflict has divided families, friends, university campuses, news organizations like the New York Times, and also ours here at Vermont Public. It's just really hard to talk about. But we realized after meeting Sarah and Raneen that we could at least offer a container for these women to share their stories about how the war has impacted their lives in Vermont. And beyond their individual stories and circumstances, we discovered they could offer us something even more valuable in return. I first met Sarah White at Hillel, located on the UVM campus, not long after October 7th. Hillel is a Jewish campus organization with affiliates all over the world, offering students a place to study, meet with friends, and discuss the meaning of Judaism, although all faiths are welcomed. UVM's Hillel is a spacious marble and slate-lined house nestled in the heart of the Burlington campus on College Street.
Yes. Hi, welcome. And grab pizza if you haven't already.
On this night, back in late fall, a group of about a dozen students met to discuss that long and troubled history of conflict between Jews and Palestinians in the Middle East. The history was told from each group's perspectives in the hopes of sparking critical thinking about the current events of the current war. After the reading and discussion, I asked if anyone wanted to follow up, and Sarah offered to speak with me about a week later, again at Hillel. That's a place that's meant a lot to her since coming to UVM from Massachusetts, where she grew up in a predominantly Jewish town.
It was definitely a bit of a culture shock to come from such a Jewish area to UVM, which is still pretty Jewish by most university standards. But it was still a place where I could find Jewish community, where I knew that not everyone in my classes was going to be Jewish, and at least there were Jewish people here.
Sarah learned of the October Hamas attacks after sleeping in on a rare day when her school schedule allowed it. She opened her phone and saw people posting on Instagram about attacks against Israel, which she at first assumed were remote rocket strikes.
Anyone who's familiar with Israel knows that they undergo a lot of rocket attacks all the time. And so at first I was like, oh, like people are probably shooting rockets at Israel again. Like, that sucks. But then I realized it was not your standard rocket attack, which is such a weird concept too. So when I realized that this was so much more, I had no clue where to begin in terms of processing it.
She also learned that a young man she had befriended on a trip to Israel was caught up in the initial Hamas attack at the Nova Music Festival.
When I was going through my phone, someone I had gone on a trip with posted a screenshot from the trip's counselor that said that someone who was on my trip was taken hostage. His name is Hirsch Goldberg-Polin. He's been all over the news.
Around this time, demonstrations and protests started popping up in Vermont, both in light of the initial Hamas attack and Israel's military response. I attended one of them, a pro-Palestinian demonstration in front of the Burlington offices of Senator Bernie Sanders, a little over a month after the war began. Protesters there, including Renin Salha, were calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Like Sarah White, Renin has concerns of her own and a personal connection to the war.
I'm here today because of my family back home. They're not able to raise their voices as much as we can here. So I'm using my freedom of speech as much as I can for liberation.
When you say your family back home, where are you talking about?
I'm talking about Gaza City.
You must be terrified for them.
I am absolutely terrified for them. There hasn't been much connection over the past few weeks. I've only contacted one person, a distant relative, and they're saying that they're basically waiting for their time of death. And yeah, I'm at the point of just no words. I'm speechless.
We caught up again a few weeks later at UVM's Waterman Building, a campus hotspot and favorite study area for Renin, which just happens to be across the street from Hillel.
So we're going to have you lead the way, if that's okay, because if you know a good spot where it might be quiet.
I was going to say the lower level has a few seating areas. I don't know if those are.
After sitting down in an empty classroom, I asked Renin about her hijab headdress. That's a symbol of modesty in Islam. She started wearing it in high school as part of her Muslim faith. But growing up on the northern edge of Chittenden County, she says there weren't many other students like her. And things started to change when the hijab became part of her everyday dress in public.
In high school, I used to be verbally harassed. I used to get into all sorts of situations with other students because of just simply being me. And those same students would be the same people who, even before I wore the hijab, would talk to me normally. So it's just like all of a sudden I put this piece on and now everyone thinks I'm a completely different person, but in the end it's just me.
These days, because Renin is fluent in Arabic, she's been able to keep up with the news about the Israel-Hamas war in two languages, for better or for worse. One night, while she was having dinner with her family in Vermont, her mother showed her an Al Jazeera news update delivered in Arabic.
And it's basically the news reporter explaining how a lot of people are under the rubble, and then I hear my last name and find out that it's actually some of my family who are actually under the rubble. So it was, I was speechless, honestly. I don't know what to tell you on it. Like, that's the last thing I kind of heard as like a major event.
What family members are we talking about here? How are they related to you?
Extended family.
But very important to you, their family.
Of course. Well, I consider all of Palestine my family, in a way.
What does your Palestinian heritage mean to you?
It's everything to me, honestly. All our lives, we've been used to having the risk of having our heritage exterminated. It's been our goal to revive it as much as we can, to keep having to say, I'm Palestinian, I'm Palestinian, I'm Palestinian, to, like, even in our daily lives, like wearing the kufiya as part of our identity, even as simple as like putting stickers on our laptop that look like that are Palestinian stickers, like the simplest of things just to reassure ourselves that, you know, we exist, since it feels like the whole world is trying to like destroy us or like kill us or like trying to wipe us out.
Similar concerns were expressed for the Jewish community when we asked Sarah about the importance of her heritage.
I've started to realize that things that I took for granted or that I thought everyone experienced were actually unique to the Jewish people.
When Sarah came to UVM as a freshman, she told herself she'd go to one social event per week. So she started attending Shabbat prayers every Friday.
And that became a very important part of my routine. But outside of that, I'm not particularly religious, which I think surprises people because I talk about Judaism so much in my everyday life now. But to me, Judaism is so much more as an ethno-religion. I've also thought a lot more about my Jewish ancestry and trying to find out more about that, where my great-grandparents have come from, and what that means for me.
But Sarah said expressing her thoughts about the latest war between Israel and Hamas at UVM could be tricky, because showing support for Israel often led to being judged by other students. She started seeing pro-Palestinian flyers and protests on campus, including a student die-in intended to focus attention on the death toll in Gaza. And Sarah says the atmosphere on campus continued to shift as the Israeli military campaign intensified.
I am very left-leaning in terms of my politics, especially socially, but then I find that my stance on Israel separates me from a lot of my peers, and people believe that I can't be on the left because I support Israel. I've heard people call Jews politically homeless, and I found that that's really resonated with me. And what's frustrating about that for me is that I don't necessarily support the Israeli government or their actions. I think a lot of things that the Israeli government is doing is absolutely horrendous and needs to be condemned. And at the same time, I don't think that's a reason to say Israel should be wiped out, because I think there are many countries that have committed many human rights violations, and no one's saying, let's disband Russia. People are not their government.
Sarah also wanted to make clear that unlike a lot of the political leaders and major antagonists driving this conflict, she does not pretend to have all the answers.
I have a lot to learn, and I'm very cognizant of my bias, especially as a Jewish person growing up, going to Hebrew school and hearing about how great Israel is. I think I will always have that bias. And I'm anti-Hamas. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I also acknowledge that many Palestinians who might hold anti-Semitic views likely hold them because of trauma they've endured. And so I tried to hold space for that as well. Obviously, there's a line, but I think that Palestinians deserve the right to exist. They deserve their own homeland. They have claim to the region as well. I don't know what a solution would look like, because my theory is that if there were a perfect solution, it would have already happened by now.
The more I got to know Renin and Sarah, the more I realized where their minds align. like thinking that so much of this larger conflict boils down to the failure of institutions and the people in charge of them. We wanted to give them the chance to talk about it together, if they wanted to.
Would you be willing to sit down with a young Jewish person and have a respectful conversation about these really difficult things, even if that conversation proved a little bit uncomfortable?
Yeah, I would be fine with that. Uncomfortable situations, uncomfortable conversations need to happen in order for a breakthrough to happen. Because if we don't understand each other, we're just going to be stuck.
And I put the same question to Sarah about speaking with a young Palestinian.
Absolutely. I hope that I could have a conversation with anyone who treated me with respect. And I would hope that they would feel respected by me also.
And that eventually led to this moment at our Vermont Public Studios.
Renine Saha, meet Sarah.
Hi, nice to meet you.
If you're just joining us, we've been listening to a special report put together by my colleague Mitch Wertlieb. It's about two women with close ties to Israel and Palestine who come together in Vermont for an honest conversation about their cultural histories and their hopes for the future. In a bit, Mitch will join us, as will a UVM professor of global religious politics. We'll open up the phone lines, and you'll be able to call in and share your reactions to Sarah and Renine's conversation. You can also email us now with your thoughts and your questions. VermontEdition@vermontpublic.org is our email. When we left off, Sarah and Renine were just meeting for the first time. Let's jump back in.
I know this is like a huge topic. I'm wondering if you had any friends, any family who, when you told, you know, them what you were doing, did any of them have any advice for you or concerns or say, really, you're going to do this? Or was everybody like, yeah, go for it?
No, everyone in general was just like, they were excited. They were like, you know what, like, go through with it, even if you are nervous. And even if conversations can be difficult, like, that's how you strive.
And Sarah, you came up here from Boston. You've graduated. You came back just to have this conversation. What did your friends and family say to you?
To be honest, I kind of didn't tell them the whole truth. I didn't really tell most people when I did the initial interview. But even when I told my grandma, I said I was doing an interview, like, with the radio, she immediately was like, well, make sure you don't give your full name and this and that. And so my family's not entirely filled in, but they'll find out eventually. I figured I'm doing this because it feels like the right thing to do, and I didn't want people to try to talk me out of it.
Before having Sarah and Renine chat with each other, I asked if there was any news about the people they had connections to in the region. Sarah had not heard any updates on the status of the young man on her bus trip to Israel, who was taken hostage when Hamas attacked. But Renine had heard some news about her family just prior to our studio interview.
Well, actually, my mother just told me that her aunt passed away yesterday due to an airstrike. So the death toll in our family has passed 40 individuals. It's been devastating. It's been tough to talk about the situation. And I just wish that this just could come to an end somehow.
I'm sorry.
I'm really sorry for your loss.
Despite that sobering news, Sarah and Renine went ahead and got to know each other a little better. For example, they each lamented the difficulty of navigating social media platforms to find information about the war, agreeing that sites like X tend to highlight provocative and sensational black and white views of events, while blunting the voices of people seeking commonality.
I'll see things like, if a celebrity advocates to bring the hostages home, that means like they're a Zionist and you can't follow them. And if you support their music, then you're trash. And it's like, oh my goodness gracious.
It's also like who and what you follow, mm-hmm. for sure. If you were to follow accounts of like, say, journalists who are on the ground, for example, that is real graphic content that you can't deny. Whereas if you're following like a pro-Palestine account, then there might be some sort of bias to it. Mm-hmm.
But even while social media tends to highlight divisiveness, Sarah and Renine focused on similarities.
We have so much in common.
So much.
It's like people don't even realize that. Like us in Arabic, we say Hadol ibn Amna, or like Wulad Amna, which literally means they're our cousins. Jewish people are our cousins because we're so close in religion. So it's just so ironic to see that, like, people are clashing like this, and there's so much going on, and there's so much conflict between the two religions, just in general. It's just, it's so whack to me, honestly.
I think also of language. Language really interests me. Of, like, all the shared root words or the shared, like, sounds. The fact that, like, both Arabic and Hebrew are read from right to left.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even, like, when I'm learning Spanish, there are, like, root words that are in, like, maybe have Arabic influences, but then I recognize the root word because I know it in Hebrew.
The two found more common ground as we dove into the politics of the conflict, and it got harder. You'll hear references by both women to the IDF, which stands for Israeli Defense Forces. I had a question about the people in power on both sides choosing violence over diplomacy, and what Sarah and Renine believe is the driving factor behind that mindset.
Pride.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. Pride. And I think if Netanyahu stops bombing civilians, then he's going to go straight to jail. And that is what's keeping this conflict going, to keep his position in place. So that's also another thing that's going on.
He was facing corruption charges before all of this began.
Yeah, he's not popular right now, and he wasn't before. Like, there are protests, and there have been protests in Israel because people do not want him leading.
They don't want him anymore.
At the same time, like, I think on, like, in my experience, I'm like, why doesn't Hamas just stop? Like, why don't they return the hostages? Why don't they stop trying to eradicate Israel? Why don't we have talks to come together and try to find a solution? Because I think historically a lot of the issues have been not wanting Israel to exist in any capacity, and then probably on the Israel side also saying, well, Palestine can't exist either. And it's so delusional because there are millions of people and they're not going anywhere.
I'll probably need a minute because you said a lot. I don't know where to start.
Take all the time.
I'll agree with you on the October 7th attack. Hamas did not have to do that. For sure. Like, without a doubt. But also, we'll say that October 7th was Hamas, but 4 months has been the IDF. And I will say that Hamas did return all the hostages, I believe, or at least most, like,
no,
I think half.
There are still, I think it's around, like, 130-something. The IDF has confirmed that at least one-fifth to one-quarter were killed.
But also, if you compare the numbers of hostages between Hamas and the IDF, it's close to 10,000 on the IDF side. So, like, there's a huge difference in proportion. You know, they're being beaten, and I've seen one woman that got released and her whole face is burned off, and it's just, like, the torture.
I think also, like, I think of, like, how at least, like, the hostages that are Israeli, like, they were, like, civilians, they were elderly people. And I'm sure that there are also, like, civilian Palestinians who are being detained or whatever word.
Of course.
I don't know, like, enough, but I don't think, like, I don't know. It frustrates me to think that, like, I don't know. It just all sucks.
Because when I say thousands, this is accumulation of over the years. Mm-hmm. This isn't just from October 7th till now, till today. This is from, like, this is decades.
I think also, from my understanding, which could be wrong, I think most, if not all, were detained because of, like, suspected terror activity. But I've also heard that the trial process is, like, unjust.
There isn't a trial process. There's a lot of injustice when it comes to detaining the Palestinian people.
So then that's something that needs to change, and hopefully soon.
This is the part of the conversation that does get a little uncomfortable when you start saying, well, look what happened on October 7th, which was terrible. look what's happened since then, that the Netanyahu government has done, the thousands of Palestinians that have been killed. It's terrible. That's the frustration I have, mm-hmm. is that there are a small number of people making very, very bad decisions, and then it conflates and it becomes a bigger thing that you can't get your hands around. Where is the point where there's a step back?
I struggle with that question mostly because I don't think I have a say in especially the government of Israel. Like, I'm a United States citizen. I could protest online. My public Instagram account has maybe a whopping 110 followers, I think. I know that there's power in numbers, of course, but I don't think I have the knowledge or the ability to make big change for the government, especially like the Israeli government, and that's just reality. So if their own people are protesting in the streets, then how is like some girl from Massachusetts going to really change their mind?
Do you feel a similar frustration to what Sarah is saying? You don't have to say yes. I'm not trying
to
put words in your mouth.
I'll somewhat disagree with you saying that we don't have an effect, because I think, okay, we'll say yes, we both have like 100 people like following us or whatever, but connection with one person leads to connection with another person, leads to connection with another person, and so on and so forth. Like, you know, how else did I meet Mitch? Like, by attending a protest? And how else are we speaking on VPR today? Like, it's connections leading to one another for you to make that big impact. I don't think we should belittle ourselves because we're such a small population, but I think we could make some sort of effect. And like I said earlier, if communities get together, it could be something that comes together at large, like our senators and our representatives here in the state, and then that could go even further. I feel like it's better to be hopeful and to be optimistic mm-hmm. than to say, like, you know what, this is probably not, like, I can't really do much.
If Renine's view seems overly optimistic to you, consider the subtle and not so subtle changes that have occurred within Vermont's own congressional delegation since the war began. Senator Bernie Sanders was initially reluctant to call for a ceasefire, even as Israel began moving into Gaza, but has shifted that stance and come out against the U.S. continuing to send military aid to Israel. And although Congresswoman Becca Ballant and Senator Peter Welch pledged full support for Israel after October 7th, they've since publicly condemned the country's military strategy in the wake of so many Palestinian civilian deaths. We're hoping that this conversation that you two are having now, we have the ability to put this on a platform and amplify your voices. So we're hoping that maybe somebody else will hear this, and maybe, just maybe, their perspective will change a little bit.
Be a little bit open-minded.
Yeah.
Just from hearing us.
And maybe they have some power, and maybe they can influence somebody else in that way. That could be overly optimistic thinking on my part, and I completely understand that it may be.
Because I feel like this is so rare, people are going to be taken aback. And I feel like they're going to start opening their eyes a bit more.
Also, I think it shows that you don't necessarily need to agree 100% with what everyone is saying. But I think at the end of the day, we're like, we have the same values. I wish, like, one thing that I think is cool for me, and I hope you don't mind me pointing this out, is like when I'm sitting in the room and I'm looking around, like you have your keffiyeh on and you have your Palestine necklace, I think, mm-hmm. right? And then meanwhile, like I'm wearing jewelry that I got in Israel. I have my Star of David on, and like we're sitting and we're coexisting and it's okay.
It's almost as if people see us like, you know, disclaimer, we're not going to strangle each other. It's like, that's absurd.
Can I just ask how you each feel about having met each other now? And I mean, how do you feel like all this went?
I feel relieved. I was nervous about coming here, thinking that there would be some sort of heated argument. Obviously, there are going to be disagreements. That's what being human is, having our own differences. But I'm overall very happy.
Yeah, excited. I think This has been a great opportunity. I'm really grateful for you agreeing to it and like going forward with it, even though I'm sure it was really scary and nerve-wracking.
Well, Radine Salha and Sarah White, I only have one thing left to say to both of you, and that is thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was Mitch Wortlieb speaking with Radine Salha and Sarah White. Now that you've heard the documentary, what questions came up for you? What questions do you have for Mitch? He joins us now in studio to tell us how this project came together. Mitch is also the host of the show Vermont This Week on Vermont Public's main TV channel and our daily news podcast, The Frequency. Welcome.
Hi, Michaela. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you. It's funny to see a host on the other side of the microphone.
I know. It feels weird, but good. Great. Feels right.
We're also joined in studio today by Peter Henney. He's an associate professor at the University of Vermont in the Political Science Department. His research focuses on how ties between religion and state affect politics. Thanks so much for coming in.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Mitch, tell us a little bit about the challenges of putting this project together. Was it difficult to find two people who wanted to have a conversation like this?
It was difficult, and for a lot of different reasons. The logistics of it, for one thing, once I met Sarah and Radine, and I felt really lucky to do so, we had to deal with their different schedules. And as you heard before, Radine is a double major, you know, doing a lot of work at the University of Vermont in her studies, and she works part-time. And then Sarah graduated from UVM, moved back to Boston. And so just the logistics of, you know, when can you come and speak with us? We wanted to get them together in the room, in this studio where we're speaking right now, so badly. And Sarah actually came back from Boston, made a special trip just to do that interview. So there was that. And then, of course, as you were alluding to at the top of the show, there was the difficulty of the subject matter at hand. Could we find two people, perhaps with very strong views or personal ties to this, who would be willing to talk about such an emotional and complex topic?
Right. Well, this is something you discuss in the classroom a lot, Peter. You teach a Middle East peace process class, in fact. What was it like discussing this topic with students in class last year in the midst of the conflict unfolding in real time?
Well, I remember the Monday after, you know, the attacks, I taught, and they actually seemed a little subdued. So I was like, oh, did you want to talk about this? And I'm like, yeah. It's like, okay. And they just sort of, it was silence. I was like, oh, you want me to talk about it? So I think probably was they just were trying to grapple with what had happened, right? Yeah. Still early stages, but also just still a little hesitant to bring something up, not knowing if it'd be wrong or controversial. As things went on and the Israeli war against Gaza picked up, it became a little more animated. But the initial response was they just wanted space to process it, I think.
Yeah, space to process it, maybe some guidance from somebody who knows this conflict so well. You've been studying it for years, yes?
Right. Maybe they wanted some of that. I think, there was a couple students who had like very strong opinions, but they do want to be heard and talked to. You know, I've had students come up to me after class and they raise concerns about, oh, the readings felt a little biased and we talked about it.
Yeah.
But then they walk away smiling because I think they just want to be acknowledged with what their concerns are, right? So have an environment where they feel safe and open, and doing that has been helpful.
Right. Well, Mitch, I'm curious what the tenor of conversation was like at the beginning compared to the end. As Peter was saying, you know, it can take people time to warm up to a person who, you know, seems like they're on the quote-unquote other side. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that shift happen with Radine and Sarah?
Luckily, and the thing that I found remarkable about both these women is that they, especially as younger people, they had such emotional intelligence. And I think it really comes through in the piece and you hear that. And, you know, right up until the point where we ask them both, would you be willing to sit down with someone with, you know, different views of yours or, you know, who may have a different stake in all this and have a respectful conversation. We didn't know up until that moment whether they would say yes. And they both immediately did. And it was really gratifying. And that's when we knew, like, we're on the right track here. and we just couldn't wait to get them in the room together. So it was more like we got to know them each individually, their personal histories first, why they were so emotionally invested in everything happening half a world away. And then it all just came together very naturally when we realized they were going to have a good conversation with each other out of respect.
Yeah. Peter, with students in your classrooms, how do you steer them away, or do you feel like you need to steer students away from finger pointing or this inclination to decide who is at fault when really it might be way more complicated than that?
Yeah, I've tried different approaches over the years. I try to be very clear about what this conversation is about and almost talk about it as marriage therapy, which most of them haven't gone through yet. But the idea that we're not here just to attack each other, but let's figure things out. So a couple of years ago, there was another war in Gaza, and they wanted a class dedicated to it. And so I said, okay, fine, we'll talk about it. But it's not about, was Zionism a mistake or what have you? Let's talk about this specific war. What can we do to stop it? Not that we shouldn't talk about the broader historical issues, but there's a time and a place for that. And things get derailed really quickly if you don't have some sort of scope.
Yeah.
I should mention too, Mikhail, that when I first met Sarah White, it was at Hillel at the University of Vermont campus. And Matt Vogel, who was the executive director there, was bringing the students together to talk about the complex history. As you know, Peter, it's really difficult going back to the 40s and the creation of Israel. But he told the perspectives from both sides, both the Palestinian perspective and the Israeli perspective. And I think that a lot of the students there that night were surprised by some of that.
Interesting. And we've had Matt Vogel on the show before. The conversations that we've brought together here on Vermont Edition as well. Some of our listeners might have heard those. We have a few calling in now. Sharon is calling in from Pennsylvania. Sharon, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, my name is Sharon. I am from Pennsylvania, but I'm in Vermont, one of my favorite states. Oh. And I really always look forward to listening to Vermont Public Radio and was very pleased to hear this show while I was driving. And I really was calling. I am a mediator and I facilitate difficult conversations in communities. And I think this show highlighted that more people than many people realize are capable and interested in having conversations about difficult topics. And thank you very much for creating this space and for sharing it to the community at large, because I hope it inspires people to have conversations and we can agree to disagree and seek commonality. So I found it very inspiring to hear. I actually myself have ties with family members in Israel and worked as a volunteer decades ago at a kibbutz directly next door to where Nova Festival happened, and know that so many people who live in that region do want peace.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for sharing your story. We really appreciate it. And thank you for listening as well while you're here in Vermont. Peter, one thing that Sharon's call just made me think of is how these conversations, like the one that we just heard, can be so, they can feel so, so poignant and so meaningful. But then you hear news of this conflict that's happening thousands of miles away, the scale of the tragedy, the decades of geopolitical context that play into it. And it can feel like anything we do here, like, whew, does it matter? Do you think things like conversations like this one, up to, protests like the ones that we saw on campuses like UVM's, can those play a role, even a small role, in these larger geopolitical affairs?
Yeah, so maybe breaking out the conversations and the protests.
Sure.
I think the conversations do have an impact. I used to be more cynical about this. I worked in D.C. before coming to UVM. And it's like, well, we need a real top-down political transformation in the Israel-Palestine conflict or really anywhere. And I just think that's not going to happen. Like, we're not going to have another Oslo process that was the closest we had to a peace deal, I think. What's going to work is to have people sitting beside, okay, we, as the students said, like we don't agree on everything, but there is some common humanity, we can find common ground. That needs to happen more maybe in Israel-Palestine. But I think having it here is just the beginning of a conversation, because as I think one of the interview subjects said, and I felt, you're afraid to even say what you think about this or say anything, yeah, because then you'll be forced. Like if I wrote something after the attacks about Hamas as a dangerous terrorist group, and then it's like, okay, so you're a pro-Israel Zionist. I'm like, I think Hamas is terror, right? And so you are very nervous about raising anything. I think that can help. Geopolitically, that's the question. This is a conversation I'm having with some of my academic friends, is how do we even measure the impact? And I don't know that we can find it in the usual way of, is a treaty signed, what have you, but these small sort of minor but substantive changes in personality and interactions help. Protests, you know, there's different views on this. I've read a lot. I think there's good argument to be made that back in the 60s, the Vietnam protests were so impactful because no one had ever seen something like that, or the civil rights protests. Here, you know, you get a huge group of people together to talk about comic books at a convention. They can have an impact. Like they seem to have pushed Sanders and you know, Bailyn into maybe supporting more of a ceasefire,
yeah,
in that sense. But there's also that fear that it further heightens polarization. So I felt the UVM protests, I know they were frustrating for the administration, were not as disruptive as on some of their campuses. And I still felt like the students were mostly respectful, which is encouraging.
Yeah. Mitch, we just heard Peter talking about this fear that I think many people have right now about saying what you feel or trying to work through verbally what you feel about a conflict as complex as what's going on between Israel and Hamas right now, out of fear that someone might misunderstand you, that you might misspeak, that you might make somebody angry. I know a lot of us as journalists worry about this, yeah, right now in our work. Was that a concern for you starting this project?
Oh, it was a huge concern. And, you know, we make reference to it at the sort of the beginning of the documentary. You know, these are difficult conversations, even for us here in the newsroom at Vermont Public. But it's more difficult than you think, because even among journalists who know that you need to think these things through and that you can have nuanced views, there's a problem with labels. And if you do say something sometimes about, you know, saying, well, I'm anti-Hamas, somebody might take that as thinking, well, you're anti-Palestinian. And Sarah pointed that out beautifully. You know, she feels that she's a left-leaning person with her politics, but as soon as she says, well, I'm anti-Hamas, she gets labeled a certain way. And we were trying so hard. We took painstaking – we really just – took a lot of time for every word, every sentence to be gone over again and again to make sure that we were trying to get our meaning out of what we were really trying to say. And it's not easy.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. We have Dennis calling in from Brookfield. Dennis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Mitch just covered the point, and I'm sorry that I didn't hear the entire show, so I missed the thing that he was just talking about, but I'm very frustrated with all the media that I hardly ever hear people who are supporting Palestinians or are Palestinian and say, I love my country, but I do not support Hamas. I absolutely do not. And I do not hear that group saying, I think Israel totally has a right to exist and have their own country. The same is reversed on the Israeli side. I do not hear people standing up and saying, Netanyahu is way off track. He's trying to, you know, and the military are performing a slaughter. Yeah, and I think the Palestinians should have. I never hear that part of the conversation. Maybe the Palestinians are simply afraid of it because of Sinwar and the group running Hamas have basically taken over the country by a coup, and that's kind of historically known. But it's frustrating for me to not hear that being voiced, because I feel like when I hear the college protests in Columbia and different people speaking, I think they're just so naive in what they're saying.
So Dennis, I'm hearing that you want more nuance to these conversations and maybe more diverse points of view. Peter, I wonder if you have any thoughts hearing about Dennis's concern there.
Yeah, it's a little unfair since I spend all my day reading all different news sites, but I do see some of this, but it is harder to see. Like there have been some things written by Palestinians in the Gaza Strip being like, look, Hamas, they're not our friends. They're not fun. There's been good things written about Palestinian Christians who feel stuck because, you know, they're facing Israeli bombardment, but are not really treated very well by Hamas as well. We've also seen massive protests in Israel against Netanyahu, even continuing after the attacks, as it became, in my opinion, became clear that he's more interested in political survival than freeing the hostages. You know, even in some of the discussion about the protests, you know, I do think some anti-Semitism got into that. It was with some of the, you know, harassment of Jewish students out at UCLA. But others in the discourse did try to distinguish between, you know, we're not against all Jewish people. And that, I mean, it may not have been always done correctly, but I think there's attempts to do this. So you can find this. But yeah, it is harder than one would hope to find this.
I would also urge the caller to please go back and listen to the documentary, because all these points are made by our two guests that we spoke with, Renine and Sarah, in so many different ways. When Sarah talks about, you know, Jews being politically homeless, or, you know, saying that people are not their government. These are exactly the kinds of things that they're expressing. And the nuance and the emotional intelligence, I know I've used that phrase once already, but that both women showed, they hold so many different views, and they're so aware of having all these different complexities come together, and they know that they don't have all the answers, but they do express, you know, the right for Palestine to exist, but also being against Hamas, the right for Israel to exist, but also understanding that they probably that they did overreact in Gaza, and tens of thousands of Palestinians with no connection to Hamas whatsoever have lost their lives. Mm. The nuance is there.
Yeah. One thing that I find fascinating watching these young people wrangle with this complex topic is how what's happening now could be formative for their entire lives. Peter, I remember you told our producer that September 11th, your experience seeing that happen your freshman year, I think, of college, is what kind of pushed you down this career path. Do you think what happened October 7th is shaping young people in the U.S. in somewhat the same way?
It could. I know for me and many others, right, we focused on studying the Middle East and working with the government or against the government, different perspectives because of 9/11. I can see a lot more attention. My fear, though, is that unlike with 9/11, this was an enemy we had to defeat, as many of us saw it. There's this fatalism and nihilism in some of the current discourse on Israel, like, what are we going to do, right? And so it might generate a lot more attention, but I worry it may not actually turn people towards constructive purposes.
Mm. Well, hopefully this conversation has been one small step towards that. We're so thankful to both of you for coming on air, and for our listeners for joining this conversation with us. You can find Mitch Wortleib's full audio documentary on vermontpublic.org. Mitch, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michaela.
And Peter Henney of the University of Vermont, thank you as well.
Great. Thanks for having me.
The audio documentary that you heard today was edited by Kevin Trevelin, with additional support from Brittany Patterson, Myra Flynn, Peter Angish, and Josh Crane. Music was by Blue Dot Sessions. Mary Angish directed today's Vermont edition. Our managing producer is John Ahrens. Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro are our producers. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett, and Myra Flynn composed our theme music. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.